We're continuing on our series on the 8 forms of capital, taking permaculture concepts into the business world and using an article put out by Appleseed Permaculture, again called 8 Forms of Capital, and saying that how can we take this agricultural concept, this agrarian concept, bring it over into the world of business and say how can we use these forms of capital in the cultivation of our business. Today we have a form of capital that most financial types would be familiar with. Unlike social capital that we have to kind of tune them into, most people would get this form of capital. It's called material capital. Material capital, from the article, is non-living physical objects form material capital. Raw and processed resources like stone, metal, timber, and fossil fuels are complexed with each other to create more sophisticated materials or structures. Modern buildings, bridges, and other pieces of infrastructure, along with tools, computers, and other technology, are complex forms of material capital. In other words, we take two or three different raw materials, jam them together, and make something functional. We have material capital, is what the article is saying. I find that actually a little bit limiting, because material capital is anything that's physical that's capital. So gold could be a material form of capital. It's not just money. It's a commodity. It has value. And it's not alive, so it meets that living, but it's not complex. It's not two things going together. So that would be an example of material that is a material capital. Any kind of a commodity, non-living commodity, I guess we would call a piece of material capital. In the business world, though, we put that on a balance sheet as office furniture, office buildings, vehicles that the business might own, anything that's, you know, hard structure the business can possibly own is considered an asset. Now, of course, we do a little bit of bookkeeping voodoo there to turn our capital into an expense without actually having that happen. And that's called depreciation. So if I own an office building, I might depreciate that every year a little bit until it's depreciated down to basically nothing. And then there's a creative little real estate rollover technique I can do to make that go away. But we'll leave that go for now. But you get the point. If I have a vehicle, I might depreciate my vehicle over 5 years with either accelerated or simple depreciation, meaning either I take a lot of depreciation up front, it slows down as it goes, or I take level depreciation across the board. My accountant can help me with that. So my material asset also becomes an asset, a form of capital, in that it creates greater financial capital by letting me keep more of the money that my business earns, right? So that's one way to see material capital. And it's what the article's talking about, and it's what people think of inside the mainstream world of material capital, but I want to expand your mind on a little bit about it. Can something be material capital if it doesn't actually exist as material? In my view, yes. Now, some people would call it intellectual capital, and I'm going to save a special bonus 9th edition of this series for the end before I really explain how things are more than one form of capital. And I'm going to save the word, I'm tempted to use it now, but I'm going to save the word that explains it from the permaculture world until then. But so if we have something like a non-physical product, like an ebook, we would say that's more of a form of intellectual capital. Okay, it's an intellectual capital because it's an informational component. But it's not really. It exists as a file. It's a PDF that exists somewhere. And a person can buy it and exchange financial capital for it, and it turns into financial capital in my hand or my bank account. It exists. It's there. It's real. And that's part of what the internet has done. We've now gone into a world where we can create a class of material assets that doesn't really exist and actually has a very flexible value, a very elastic value. How valuable is your ebook? What's its value as material capital in your business? How many do you sell a year? If you sell it for $10 and you routinely sell 100 copies a year, then we know it's worth about $1,000. And if you have done it every year, year after year after year for several years, and this year looks the same as it always has before, you know that that has basically $1,000 a year in value as a structured asset of your business. Now, an accountant isn't going to let you stick it on your balance sheet, but we're not talking, when we talk about these forms of capital, some of this stuff goes on a balance sheet, some of it doesn't, right? Or they might say that's an intellectual capital thing, kind of like a royalty, but it's not. It's not like a royalty because you actually own it and you sell it for the full price. And you have it and you can transfer the ownership of it. See, we're starting to get into what I'm going to say for the end of today's episode, which is how do we know if something's really capital or not? What's the litmus test we can do there? And there's kind of a sneak peek of it right there. So non-physical products in a business can be capital. Now, there's the beautiful part of that. You can create non-physical products. You can create one a day. You can create one a week. You can create one a month. It's up to you. And they don't actually have to be sold directly to be capital if they generate things that lead to the generation of capital. So every time you do a post on your blog or every time you do a podcast or every time you do a YouTube video, it is a form of intellectual capital. But in the modern mindset of the modern Web 2.0 version of business, it's a piece of material capital. You own it. It can be transported. It can be sold. It can be sold over and over and over again, or it can be sold one time by delivering the rights and therefore the material ownership to another party. It's material capital. You can split hairs and say it isn't. If you're an accountant, this bothers you that I'm even saying it this way. But in reality, it is material capital. And we'll get to a little bit more on that as well in a bit. But there's also other things that I think of as material capital in a business. Some might go on the balance sheet as an asset. Some might not. Some might be something you could depreciate, and some might not be. If I own software that I've purchased, let's start out with I've purchased software. It's an asset if it does good things for my business. Even if it's, as long as I own the rights to use that software indefinitely, for as long as it lasts, for as long as it's functional, it's an asset in my business. I'm probably not going to get away with a depreciation expense on it, but it is an asset. If I write my own software that I own that's proprietary, even if I'm not selling it to others or licensing it to others, but it's inside my business, it allows my business to function at a higher level, and because of that, my business is more efficient. I create greater edge effect in my business for the permaculturists out there that are really digging this thing, right? And it gives me more power as an entrepreneur. It's kind of a form of material capital, isn't it? If I have a system set up with procedures and protocols in my business, those can also be my business process. It's really, again, it's blending the worlds between intellectual and material capital. By the strict definition of the word, it's non-material, so it can't be material capital. But if it's packageable, right, if I have a system that's almost like a franchise, that I can just take the information, even as ones and zeros in a computer program with instructions, and I can open up a new office, and I can put somebody in charge of that office, and I can say, here's your systems and procedures and software and day-to-day management principles like a how-to book. And I can put that in front of them. They can legitimately pick it up and operate that office from day one and do so profitably and well. It kind of starts to create this bridge between is it IPR or is it material capital? It's a thing. That doesn't, it's just, see how that world is. And it's important, and I'm going to save it till the end. I'm going to save it till episode 9 of the series to really explain how these overlaps and interlaying components actually function and why it's important. I just want to get you thinking about it for now. Now, what material capital teaches us, though, is how we can do what's called a capital litmus test. Is something in the business capital or not? Now, again, I'm not concerned with your CPA's definition. I'm not concerned with the Internal Revenue's definition. I'm not concerned with the bank's definition right now. There's times to be very concerned with those three entities. Like when you need financing or you have to pay taxes. You need to pay attention to what those people consider capital, what they consider assets, and what they consider liabilities. But from a standpoint of is it capital from a business cultivation standpoint, I consider it capital if I can use it to generate other forms of capital or if I can exchange it for capital. So, for instance, if my business is mining gold, every ounce of gold that I pull out of the ground is material capital until such time as I sell it to the market. When I sell it to the market, I've converted it to financial capital. Okay, now I can either leave that in the business, I can leave some of it in the business. I can take it all out, I can take part of it out as profit paid to myself as the business owner, but I can exchange it. So when I look at something like an ebook, it follows the exact same definition. It exists, it is there. It might exist as bytes and bits, but it exists. And I can exchange it from one form of capital into another. I can offer it to a customer, and I can convert it into financial capital. But how far does the conversion go? If it's a kick-ass ebook, it's a kick-ass ebook. If anybody that reads it is really going to dig what I'm doing and want to be part of what I'm doing and get involved with me, if it makes people decide, I want to hook up with this guy, and they go to Facebook and they look at my Facebook page and they friend me up or they fan me or they subscribe to me. They follow me on Twitter. They join my forum. It's exchanging into what? It's exchanged now into social capital. So now I can exchange it from material to social capital. And I can build all the great things that happen from a social capital standpoint. And unlike typical material capital, I can do it over and over and over again. I don't have to make a new one to be able to sell it to the next person. I don't have to print a new one to be able to sell it to the next person. Once it's done infinitely. So electronic material capital might be the word to make up with this. Well, what does that tell us? If it really converts well to social capital, I have to start thinking about new rules of my business. Does my ebook convert better to financial capital or social capital? If it converts better to social capital, am I better off giving it away? Is this what internet marketers have been doing since the dawn of the real internet? Exchange with me your email address, and I shall give you my free ebook, dear reader. Oh, snap. See, that's what we've always been doing. We just didn't know it. Now, what has Jack been teaching you? When you're exchanging information for contact, I don't care if it's a tweet follow, I don't care if it's a Facebook follow, I don't care if it's a forum sign up, I don't care if it's a blog subscription, I don't care if it's an email list, just get something. Any form of social capital in exchange for this material / intellectual capital is a gain. But if I can do it in multiple facets, if I can exchange my material capital for both financial and social capital, am I not better off? And if I can create, let's say, some level of spiritual capital as well. Let's look at something like I do copper coins for the Survival Podcast and The Real Truth About Money. And when somebody buys one of those copper coins from, let's say, a third party, it's not even me, I have a license agreement where I make a dime. If they buy it from my TSP Copper Store, I make a little bit more than that. I've exchanged the material capital that my business actually owns through another business, because AOCS Mint does that for me. I don't actually touch those. I only pay for them when my customer buys them, and then I get the differential, and they do the fulfillment. Drop shipping, cool, right? So, but it is a material piece of capital, even though I'm not the one holding it. I hold it for a split second when the customer buys it. The Mint is holding it as material capital. AOCS, it's their material capital. It briefly becomes mine and immediately becomes the recipient's. But then that coin ships, and people only pay a couple bucks for them. So maybe they buy 20 or 40 of them. And on there's the name of my business. And on the backside's the name of a blog that I have. And then there's this message of strength and honor and knowledge that's on the front of there, and independence and liberty. And then the real truth about money on the backside. Well, what happens when they give that piece of material capital that I've already gotten a financial gain for away? I have a social capital gain to whoever they give it to is like, this is cool, this is different. So then that grows my social capital. How much? It depends. Some people are just going to go, that's kind of cool, and it doesn't really grow much at all. But a lot of people are going to say, what is this Survival Podcast thing, and look it up. If I gain a listener, I gain social capital. But that piece of material is now moving. And if it goes into the AOCS marketplace and starts getting used as a barter implement, which is what it's designed to be, it begins to evangelize. Now I've got spiritual capital. You start to see how they intermesh. And that's how we know if it's capital. Can I exchange it for other capital? And the question then becomes, how many other forms of capital can I exchange one piece of capital for? How much more can it generate? Because capital, when leveraged properly, expands. See, and this is a permaculture principle. Anywhere there's an edge in permaculture, so if I have a garden surrounded by rocks, the greatest abundance is actually going to be where the garden meets the rocks, and the grass meets the rocks, and if I don't understand that, I have a whole bunch of weeds there, or I can have a whole bunch of production there. Well, in the world of business, where the customer meets the business is the edge, where the material capital goes into the hand of the customer or into the mind of the customer if it's a non-physical, non-material, material capital, right? Interesting. Where that edge occurs is where the abundance occurs, where the replication occurs, where the reproduction occurs, where the spiritual capital manifests itself, so to speak. So tune in tomorrow. We'll go into the next form of capital. We're about halfway through now. Financials coming up soon. That'll be almost the boring one, but I'll make it interesting. And then the bonus episode, episode 9, where I'm really going to hit you hard between the eyes with how all these forms of capital interplay with each other, where the gray areas are, why the gray areas are what I call the edges, and why that's the most powerful components of each one of the forms of capital. With that, this has been another episode of 5 Minutes with Jack.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of 5 Minutes with Jack. To learn more, connect with our community, get free resources to build your business, visit jackspirko.com.